Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Tom C. Scott Talk Show. I've been trying to reach Jeff Rogers. He's not available at the moment, but we'll move to our next interview with Larry Bodine of Arizona Blog, one of the most respected blogs in all of Arizona. By the way, Larry does an amazing job with Arizona Blog. Rated by the Washington Post, Arizona's best blog, Larry Bodine brings 44 years of journalism to this interview. It includes award-winning years with the New York Daily News. He's an attorney, has been active in Illinois and Arizona politics for many years. Larry, thanks for being with us. I appreciate you coming up a little early. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. John, it's my pleasure to be on your show.
We were talking in last week's edition of our show with a couple of GOP strategists, Matthew Klink, Los Angeles GOP strategist, and then Sam Stone, who worked for Martha McSally at one time, now works for a Republican councilman in Phoenix, about these key races. Let's take Congressional District 2. How do you see that race shaping up? We got a gaggle of Democrats running. Obviously, there's a situation where Ann Kirkpatrick supposedly has the inside track to the win this nomination, but who knows? And Leah Marquez Peterson, seen as the favorite for the Republican GOP. How do you see that race shaping up, Larry?
Well, I think it's interesting in a number of respects. You know, you hear a lot about this blue wave forming, and I've been out there a lot, John, and I can tell you I've seen it. And it's reflected by the large number of candidates that are running for Congress in Congressional District 2. But having heard all the candidates several times over the last many months, I see Ann Kirkpatrick as the lead candidate for the Democratic Party. You know, she's been in Congress for two terms. She's backed by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, as well as the Giffords Law Center Against Gun Violence. She's got the experience. She's got the platform. I think she's going to be the candidate that the Democrats nominate to run for Congress in Tucson.
Obviously, that's a big money race. Ann has the capability of raising millions. I don't know how many millions, but other candidates, I would assume Bruce Wheeler, the former state representatives, others, our civil servant at one time, and others in that race, simply, I don't think, have the capability of being competitive when it comes to writing out checks. What's your take on the money part of that race?
Well, you know, the money is a practical part of any campaign. You have to be able to raise funds to hire staff to, you know, create materials to sponsor canvases and phone-a-thons and so forth. And, you know, basically to put support behind all of the Democratic Precinct Committee people that are going to be out there knocking on doors. And frankly, no one else has come near Ann Kirkpatrick. She's raised $750,000. And, you know, some of the other candidates, all of whom I like, by the way, and are favorites of mine, but, you know, they've raised $15,000 or $50,000. And, you know, it really conveys that they haven't been serious about their campaigns in terms of raising money.
By the way, on the Republican side, Leah Marquez Peterson was claiming, well, I've got $400,000, and she may have $1 million or whatever. She's so close to Doug Ducey, I'm sure she's close to the Koch brothers, and there'll be money probably coming in from other sources outside of the state, dark money, more than likely. I think Leah will be well-financed, don't you? I think the Republicans want to hold that seat, as it's in Republican hands with Martha McSally at the moment.
Well, I think so. You know, when she spoke at a secret GOP, I guess you call it candidates forum a few weeks ago, she was complaining that she only had $400,000, and she was calling on the people in the audience to, you know, to donate, please, to her campaign, which, you know, I really thought was ironic when you consider that it was just a few years ago that Leah Marquez Peterson filed for bankruptcy for $3.2 million, which is about the amount of money that she's got to raise now. You know, she took a chain of Chevron gas stations and a convenience store and ran it into the ground with unpaid loans, unpaid federal taxes, and unpaid property taxes. And this is the lead Republican candidate.
That's going to come back to haunt her in this race, isn't it?
Well, you know, I think so. And it's just the whole way the GOP has conducted this. they had their GOP forum at a private club. You could only find out about it if you were on GOP mailing lists that it was even taking place. I found out about it and went into it, and I was surprised that you had to pay to get in. You know, these people are running for public office, but you had to pay to get in. And I smelled fear. I heard them talk about Democrats making gains, complaints, particularly from Leah, that they weren't raising enough money, and you know, how they would deal with things if you know, they didn't have the majority in the House and the Senate anymore.
Let's move to the U.S. Senate race, where Martha McSally moves out of Congressional District 2, opening up that seat as we profiled the race from Republicans and Democrats in that southern Arizona congressional district. But you have, obviously, Joe Arpaio, Kelly Ward from the very far right. I don't know how to get any further right than that. I mean, you can't even explain that. I absolutely will tell you. And then, of course, you've got Martha, who I would think would be the favorite to pick up the GOP nomination for the U.S. Senate seat now held by Jeff Flake. And then, of course, on the Democratic side, Kyrsten Sinema, the congresswoman from the central part of the state, seems to have a pretty good, I think, effort going for herself and probably will pick up the Democratic nomination. Could be Sinema and McSally. That'll be interesting, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I think that'll be a battle for the Titans. I think you're right on the money there. Interestingly enough, though, a recent public policy polling survey found that the race is 46% in favor of Sinema, which is surprising, you know, considering that McSally is down here from Tucson. She's been in Congress. She's on her third term right now. I'm sorry, I'm talking about Sinema. But, you know, with I think the big thing that McSally has misgauged is what the big issues are. One of the big issues is health care. And there's one vote that McSally is really famous for, and that is for voting against Obamacare, you know, using the, well, I can't say it on your show, but it's let's get this effing thing done. And I think the voters are going to remember that. You know, health care, Medicare, Social Security, these are all issues that are close to people's hearts. Then over on Sinema's side, now Sinema has been in Congress for three terms, so she's actually got more experience than McSally. And before that, she was in the Arizona House and the Arizona Senate. So you could say that Sinema is the candidate that's got more experience. And it's really going to turn, I think, on the big issues. And, you know, John, I'm sure as you know, one of them is gun safety. I walked in the March for Our Lives a couple of weeks ago, and I can tell you there are a lot of people who are now concerned about our lax gun laws. McSally, of course, gets an A from the NRA, and Sinema is in favor of gun safety and gun control. And, you know, I think those are going to be key issues in that race.
Speaking of key issues, you know, I've interviewed Sinema when she was in the House of Representatives for Arizona and in the Senate, and I was in her office in Washington. Big deal when she was initially elected to Congress was she was bisexual. Nobody seems to care. I don't care. I don't think you care, but nobody that didn't seem to be an issue, and probably a few years back that would have been the big story.
Yeah, but I think it's a sign that, you know, times have gotten better and that people have just become more enlightened in the fact that it really doesn't matter who you love. You know, people should be allowed to fall in love with people that they do, and that doesn't really make a whit of difference in how somebody's going to be performing in office. But, you know, what they're going to be looking up to is who McSally is snuggling up to, and that's President Trump. She has practically, John, been crawling into her lap, you know, saying that in e-newsletters, which I get, that, you know, oh, what a great thing it is that we've sent the National Guard to the border and militarized it. What a great thing it is that we cut taxes for billionaires, and that it's just a great thing that we're cracking down on these sanctuary cities. And, you know, her record is 97% in line voting with Trump, so I think we see a Trump stand-in here for McSally. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you take a look at the first race she had, of course, with Ron Barber, and she wins by 168 votes. You know, obviously that district is more moderate than was then, and Matt Hines did not run a very good race against her, and she won overwhelmingly in a rerun to the House. That district's unique. It's got a rural area in Cochise County. It's a border district. It's got some urban districts to it, but it also has Green Valley. A lot of people there are elderly and Republican, and many are Democrat, but they're concerned about health care. They're concerned about Social Security. You know, you have to be pretty careful, and you can't run to the far right in that district and get away with it. We've seen that over and over again of Republicans who have sought that seat, not only against Gabby Giffords, but obviously against Ron Barber. You just can't run too far to the right and hold that district, I don't think.
No, I would agree. And, you know, you also can't run too far to the left. And that's why I think Sinema is a much more appropriate candidate for the U.S. Senate seat because, you know, she doesn't always vote the party line. She got up and spoke recently and said that, you know, she really doesn't care how her vote aligns up with other caucuses and other congresspeople, that she votes her conscience and she votes what she sees is in the best interest of Arizona. So you've got a centrist Democrat who is known statewide, and you've got a conservative Republican who is known for the A-10 aircraft down at Davis-Monthan Air Base. I just don't think people in other parts of the state care about the A-10.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Sinema, I've seen her debate. You don't want to underestimate her. She is feisty. And McSally, who can be pretty strong in her rhetoric, obviously we've seen that from time to time, is not going to be able to out-talk Kirsten Sinema. Sinema is really a tough lady. She really is. And you don't want to mess with her, because she will come back at you with anything you give her. I assure you of that.
Well, she's very articulate. She's very smart. I've heard her speak, and it reflects the how far she's come in her life. I mean, she grew up homeless, living in a gas station without electricity or even a toilet. And she was smart enough in school to get student loans and Pell grants, and put herself through college. And you know, a kid with a background like that is going to be pretty tough.
All right. Hang on just a second. We have Bill Buckmaster on the line. Let's put him on for a minute. Larry, hang on just a second.
Certainly.
Host of the Buckmaster Show, noon, here at KVOI, 10:30, The Voice. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. I just want to welcome you back to the airwaves in Tucson. It's an honor to have you again sharing the mic with us at KVOI. And I wanted to ask your guest a quick question about the governor's rather dramatic decision to give teachers pretty much what they are asking. How will that impact not only averting a strike, but how will it impact the governor's race? And I'll take my answer off the air. Again, thanks for being back on the air, John.
Oh, that's so kind of you to say that. I have the greatest respect for you. We've been friends for a long time. I've been a huge fan of Bill Buckmaster. Still am today. Well, Larry, what do you think?
I got to say, same with me. I listen to Bill Buckmaster, too, so it's really cool that he came online. And, you know, I think with the governor, who has done his best to starve Arizona's education system so that it's the worst place for a teacher to teach and the lowest level of per pupil student funding nationwide, to suddenly turn around and say, when he's pressed into a corner and facing a possible strike, oh, I changed my mind. Let's give him 20%. No, let's give him 20%, but over 3 years. And, oh, let's count that 1% raise. Don't forget the 1% raise I was going to give him. I think it's viewed as disingenuous and, just sort of pandering because he knows there's an election coming up.
You know, one thing, Larry, 2 years ago when he had a State of the State address, he talked about, I'm going to take care of the teachers, and the Arizona Education Association believed him, Tucson Education Association believed him, teachers all over the state believed him, and it didn't happen at all. And then he came up with Proposition 123. We said all along, there's some real legal problems with it, and now it's being challenged in federal court, and that's taking money from the state land trust to pay for teachers, and it was a pittance, an absolute pittance. And the AEA was fooled by the governor. The Tucson Education Association was fooled by the governor. All teachers were fooled by the governor. I think they ought to they ought to take a real look at this with a jaundiced eye and say, is he trying to fool me again? And because he fooled me before. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I think that's exactly what I'm seeing too. You know, I read what the legislators say on the Democratic side and Republicans too, and they're all very skeptical because he's just sort of blurted out this pay raise, but he really doesn't have any mechanism in place to accomplish it. And I take his opponent much more seriously, and that would be Steve Farley, who has been spelling out precisely how he would give teachers a 20% pay raise. Steve Farley says there are 331 sales tax corporate loopholes, and he's identified all of them. And he says just by closing some of them, by closing $3 billion of them, for example, that would not only cut the statewide sales tax by 1%, but you could give the teachers a 20% pay raise this year, not over 5 years, like Ducey's, talking about. So, you know, I think Ducey's got quite a lot to prove here before anybody's going to take him seriously.
Well, Governor Ducey says he believes there's enough new tax dollars coming into the state through the economic development and population growth to immediately bump the average teacher's salary by 9% to, I think, over $52,700 by the new school year that starts in August, and that compares to about $48,000 now, according to the Auditor General Office. Well, if you had the money yesterday, why didn't you use it? because today you've got the threat of teachers walking out of their classrooms throughout the entire state. So, I mean, had that money all along, why didn't you put it to teachers, which was sorely needed, and everybody knew that. There's a real problem with this, a real problem. But
he's operating under this, bogus economic principle, which is, they tried this in Oklahoma too, where they had a teacher strike, where they basically decided if we cut taxes and we cut the state government to like just a nub, so it's just barely functioning, then there'll be like this economic spring that will just bloom. And, it didn't happen in Oklahoma. It hasn't happened in Arizona.
Didn't happen in Kansas.
It won't happen anywhere.
Kansas was almost destroyed by that whole idea. I'm from Kansas. My twin sister lives back there. And, their farm-to-market roads have deteriorated. They started consolidating schools, which was really the lifeblood of about 1,000 small towns throughout Kansas and the identity of them. And people are now getting on buses and traveling 45 minutes to an hour to go to another school. And their schools are being closed. It was an absolute disaster. And they're throwing these conservative Republicans out of office in Kansas and electing more moderate Republicans to try to deal with the crisis by Brownback that just absolutely almost destroyed Kansas. I mean, he said, oh, they're all going to come. The economy's going to be, so fantastic that everybody will come from all over the United States to Kansas. Nobody came. And one of the reasons they didn't come is because education was a disaster. So that's where we are.
Well, that's right. And what I'm seeing out there that people are referring to as a blue wave is there's a lot of deep-seated anger at Ducey. You know, who wants to be in a state that's 50th in per pupil spending? I mean, we can't even hide behind Alabama or Mississippi and say we're better than them. And, the schools have been starved for 10 years. We're spending way less per student than we did a decade ago. And, you listen to what the Republicans are talking about, and they're talking about, we've got to build a wall. We need to have a first strike on North Korea, and we need to deport all these DACA recipients. And this is not what people care about. There is no public support for all these Republican policies, because what people want is good health care, they want gun safety in the schools, and they want an education system that pays teachers well and spends a lot on students.
Well, and very quickly, and I'm on out of time, Larry, but even Jan Brewer realized that. She went to the people of Arizona and said, vote for an additional sales tax to fund education. And 68% of Arizonans, all the way to Paradise Valley and back, voted yes on that. And it was Doug Ducey who, when this was to be renewed to keep the money flowing to schools, launched his own financial campaign to defeat the continuation of the sales tax to fund education. That is why we are where we are,
yes,
thanks to this governor. And we had a Republican governor who said, I want to save schools, let the people vote. And she did this against her own Republican majority in the House and the Senate. Voters said, yes, I support education. I will pay more in the sales tax. It passed. We were on our way to at least some stability in the funding of schools, and it was destroyed by Doug Ducey, who single-handedly led the charge to stop that funding for schools. That is why we are where we are. Larry Bodine, thanks so much for being with us. I appreciate it. One people, if you want a progressive look at Arizona, go to Blog Arizona.
Blog for Arizona, that's right.
Blog
so
for
much,
Arizona.
John.
Good to talk with you. We'll talk again soon. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Larry Bodine, Blog for Arizona. One of the most read political blogs in the state, rated by the Washington Post as Arizona's best blog. 44 years of journalism, including award-winning years with the New York Daily News. And Larry's an attorney, has been active in Illinois and Arizona politics for many years.